I'm Stevie Nicks, and welcome to Where to Begin, the podcast that is your beginner's guide to a singer or band. Today, we're going to take a look at one of the greatest songwriters of the past 50 years, a guy who gets lost in the shadow cast by Dylan, Lennon and McCartney, and Jagger Richards, but he should receive more recognition. Indeed, Rolling Stone says he is the eighth greatest songwriter of all time, behind Dylan, McCartney, Lennon, Chuck Berry, Smokey Robinson, Jagger Richards, and Goffin King. And that is some esteemed company. And the good thing about today is we can look at Paul Simon's complete catalogue while he's still alive, because he says he doesn't intend to make any more records. And as we wind our way through his albums, including those he made with Art Garfunkel, we're going to do it by passing on the hits. You are already more than familiar with them.
A winter's day in a deep and dark December, I am alone, gazing from my window to the streets below, on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. I am a rock, I am a
Now, I walked people through Paul Simon's backstory on the Bridge Over Troubled Water episode on my Song Sung New podcast, but assuming you haven't heard that, a quick recap goes something like this. He meets Art Garfunkel in elementary school in 1953, which makes him 12, and is already captivated by Garfunkel's voice. Simon starts writing songs, and by the time they're 15, they are already performing at school dances. In 1957, they record a song called Hey Schoolgirl, which they pay for themselves. While they're recording, a promoter called Sid Prosen likes what he hears and signs them to an independent label. They are both 15, so he needs to get their parents' permission. He suggests they use the name Tom and Jerry. They agree, and Hey Schoolgirl, which sounds very Everly Brothers, gets released. The song gets picked up on radio and even goes as high as 49 on the Billboard chart. They then put out two more singles, but neither matches the success of their first, so they refocus their attention on their schoolbooks, thinking the music business may not be for them. Simon isn't done with trying, though, and unbeknown to Garfunkel, he records another single, True or False, under the name True Taylor. And here it is. And it is difficult to believe this is actually Paul Simon singing, but it is.
On the telephone, baby, please answer true or false. You like to gentle, that's when we're alone, baby, please answer true or false. And when we had a party, you never asked for no one else, and I went for him, my love, and not my heart just now. Well, it'd be so sad if I just go away, baby, please answer
true or false. Garfunkel finds out, though, and is incensed. He sees it as a betrayal, and legend has it, he still hasn't forgiven Simon. After graduating from high school, the pair of them start recording independently, but in 1963, they get back together and decide to try the folk route. They start performing in various clubs in Greenwich Village as Kane and Gar. One night they play a couple of Simon's originals, one of which is The Sound of Silence, and it catches the attention of Columbia's Tom Wilson, who was in the audience. Wilson meets them afterwards and tells them he'd like to record one of the other songs that night, a song called He Was My Brother, and give it to a band that he's producing. Simon says he wants Wilson to let him audition for Columbia, and if he does, he'll let them have the song, so Wilson agrees and gets Columbia to sign them. With the recording contract in their back pocket, Simon and Garfunkel head back to Columbia Studios in March 1964, and with Wilson producing, record their debut album in just three sessions. The record is called Wednesday Morning 3 AM. It comes out in October of that year, 1964. And one of the songs on it was He Was My Brother, which was written in memory of Andrew Goodman, a fellow college student and civil rights activist who was killed in 1964 by the Ku Klux Klan, along with two other people. The song is credited to Paul Kane, which was another Simon alias. And here it is.
He was my brother, 5 years older than I. He was my brother, 23 years old. Freedom Rider, they curse my brother to his face. Go town's gonna be your burying place.
The album only sells about 3,000 copies though, so Simon moves to England where he meets a girl named Kathy Chitty and he falls in love. He would write a few songs about her, the most famous being Kathy's Song. While he's over there, CBS asks him to make a solo album and they fly Wilson over to produce it. Garfunkel, still disillusioned with the music business and not really thinking either he or Simon were going to make a fist of it, doesn't object. Called the Paul Simon Songbook, the album comes out in August 1965 and contains versions of The Sounds of Silence and He Was My Brother. Neither are an improvement on the songs he cut with Garfunkel, though. All in all, only two of the other tracks would not end up on subsequent Simon and Garfunkel albums, and they were The Side of a Hill and A Church is Burning. But I'm not going to play you either of those songs for the simple fact that they're not very good. Instead, let's hear Flowers Never Bend with the Rainfall, which Simon and Garfunkel would later re-record on their third album.
Through the corridors of sleep, past the shadows dark and deep, my mind dances and leaps in confusion. I don't know what is real, I can't touch what I feel, and I hide behind the shield of my illusion. So I'll continue to pretend that my life will never end and the flowers never bend with the rainfall. The mirror on my wall casts an image dark and small, but I'm not sure at all it's my reflection. I am blinded by the light of God and truth and right, and I wander in the night without direction. So I'll continue to pretend that my life will never end and the flowers never bend with the rainfall. It's no matter if you're...
Sales were sluggish, so Simon stayed in the UK while Garfunkel embarked on a master's degree in maths at Columbia University. Back in the States, a DJ in Boston takes a liking to The Sounds of Silence and starts playing it over and over one night. The next day, it's picked up by other DJs on the East Coast and suddenly there's renewed interest in the song. Upon hearing all this, Wilson, who is by now helping Bob Dylan turn electric, gets the idea to overdub some electric guitar, bass and drums onto the song and put it out as a single. Simon hears it and hates it, but the single sells. In fact, it sells so much that by January 1966, it's top of the charts. So Columbia tells someone to track Simon and Garfunkel down and get them back into the studio to record a new album. They already have the title, Sounds of Silence. It's how things worked back in those days. So Simon and Garfunkel do as they're told and spend 3 weeks making their second album, which consists of new versions of some of the songs Simon did on the Paul Simon Songbook, plus 4 new tracks. Sounds of Silence is rush-released mid-January 1966 and peaks at number 21. Garfunkel gives up on becoming a mathematician. Songs on the record include Kathy's Song, April Come She Will, I Am a Rock, and of course the electrified title track. A week later, Homeward Bound, which isn't on the album, is put out as a single. Why wasn't it on the album? Well, who knows? It should have been. It's one of the best songs Simon's ever written. Truth is, though, because the album is so rushed, Simon and Garfunkel are still trying to work out what they should be. Are they a folk act or a folk rock act? Listening to the album, it's clear they haven't made up their mind, or have it made up for them by CBS. Now, because this is a Paul Simon episode, as distinct from a strictly Simon and Garfunkel episode, the track I'm going to play is an instrumental, which is just Simon on his acoustic guitar. It's called Angie, and here it is. By the success of their second album, CBS puts out Wednesday Morning 3 AM and it climbs to 30. Now, when it comes to record companies, success can go one of two ways. It either means you have to make another album in a hurry to capitalise, or it buys you time. And Sounds of Silence bought Simon and Garfunkel time. They didn't like what they had been made to do in such a hurry, and told CBS if they gave them more time, they could make something even better. So CBS obliged, on one condition. They head straight back into the studio. Once there, they could take all the time that they needed. The duo's third album, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary and Thyme, took 9 months to complete and was produced by the legendary John Hammond. Now, it may have taken 9 months, but as soon as CBS had their hands on it, which was September-October, they put it straight out. With 9 months to think about what sort of duo they wanted to be, the pair of them decided to head down the folk route, so Parsley, Sage, Rosemary and Thyme is a mostly acoustic affair. That said, it does have some folk rock on it. The record contains Homeward Bound, It Just Had to Find a Home Eventually, Scarborough Fair, the 59th Street Bridge Song, and For Emily, Whenever I May Find Her. But I'm going to play a simple desultory filler pick, which sees Simon doing his best Bob Dylan impression. He later told Rolling Stone, quote, "One of my deficiencies is my voice sounds sincere. I've tried to sound ironic. I don't. I can't. With Dylan, everything he sings has two meanings. He's telling you the truth and making fun at the same time." End quote. And what's a desultory filler pick? Well, desultory is to lack plans or purpose, and filler pick is a verbal attack. Here's a simple desultory filler pick.
Norman Mailer, Maxwell Taylor. I've been John O'Hara, McNamara. I've been Rolling Stone and Beatle till I'm blind. I've been Ayn Randed, nearly branded a communist, cause I'm left-handed. That's the hand they use. Well, never mind. I've been Phil Spector, resurrected. I've been Lou Adler, Barry Sadler. Well, I paid all the dues I want to pay. And I learned the truth from Lenny Bruce. And all of my wealth won't buy me help. So I smoke a pint of tea a day. I'm no man's brain to smile. You couldn't think of nothing at all. Not the same as you and me. It doesn't take poetry. You're so unhip when you say Dylan.
He thinks you're talking about Dylan Thomas, whoever he was. The man ain't got no culture. But it's all right, Ma, everybody must get stoned.
Parsley, Sage, Rosemary and Thyme justified the time taken to record it. It climbed to number 4 on the US chart, and in 2003, Rolling Stone ranked it as high as 201 on its list of the best 500 albums ever made. The following year, though, 1967, Simon suffered writer's block. Maybe he was just worn out, who knows, but the songs just weren't coming. And he's to be congratulated for putting his hand up and saying, no, I don't have an album's worth of material, because Columbia would have put anything out, given half the chance. That said, he did provide Mrs. Robinson for the Graduate soundtrack, which came out that year. Anyway, sessions for Simon & Garfunkel's fourth album were spread out over January and June 1967, plus February 1968, by which time Simon was satisfied that he had enough songs for what would become Bookends. Bookends, which came out in April 1968, is a concept album, or the first side is at least, and it explores the life journey from childhood to old age, hence the album's title. Side 2 consists of songs that he held back from The Graduate, although Mrs. Robinson does get a Guernsey. The record is short, it only goes for about 29 minutes, and it was meticulously made. Punky's Dilemma, for example, took 50 hours to complete the vocals. They were re-recorded, sometimes note by note, until Simon was satisfied. So let's have a listen to it. Here's Punky's Dilemma.
Wish I was a Kellogg's cornflake, floating in my boat, taking movies, relaxed in a while, living in style. LA. Casually glance at his toupee. Wish I was an English muffin, got to make the most out of a toaster. I'd ease myself down. And very more than any ordinary jam. I'm a Citizens for Boys and very jam fan. Outside California, if I become a first lieutenant, would you put my photo on the piano? Jane, best wishes, Martin. Oh, Roger, drive, can't you leave him by the basement door? Everybody knows when he's tiptoeing down that floor.
Bookends came out just 10 weeks after The Graduate soundtrack and spent 7 weeks at the top of the US chart, and it stayed in the top 200 for more than a year. It also topped the chart in the UK. Simon later called it, quote, our first serious piece of work, end quote. By now, Simon & Garfunkel were the biggest duo in the world, and it had taken just 3 years since their first album came out. On the back of The Graduate, film producers were lining up outside Simon's front door, asking him to contribute to their movies, and Simon turned them all down. Ironically, it was Garfunkel who ended up making a movie, taking up an offer from director Mike Nichols to appear in Catch-22. Simon wasn't happy, believing Garfunkel should have been concentrating on his music career, but Garfunkel couldn't understand why he couldn't make a movie while Simon was writing songs. And I have to say, I think he has a point. Anyway, in November 1968, they record 2 tracks before taking a 12-month hiatus, before returning in November 1969 to record the rest. And again, as soon as the album, and this one was Bridge Over Troubled Water, was delivered to CBS, it was in the record stores, coming out in January 1970. The record was a critical and commercial smash, topping the charts right around the world on the back of the title track being issued as the first single and followed by the boxer. Yeah, that song. Bridge Over Troubled Water, the album, was the best-selling album of 1970, 1971, and 1972, and at the time was the biggest-selling album ever. And it remained CBS's biggest-selling album until Michael Jackson put out a record called Thriller 12 years later. So which song to play? Because there is quite a few to choose from, including El Condor Pasa and Cecilia, but I'm going to go with The Only Living Boy in New York. Simon wrote the song about Garfunkel going off to make that movie in Mexico while he was forced to stay home and write songs, and he expresses his frustration with the line, "Here I am, the only living boy in New York." Elsewhere, Simon acknowledges the fact that Garfunkel was eyeing a career in movies, believing his fractured relationship with Simon was about to come to a head and he may need another job. Simon sings, "Tom, get your plane right on time. I know that you're eager to fly now." Tom being a reference to Garfunkel's name when they called themselves Tom and Jerry. The Only Living Boy in New York is distinguished by its vocal parts, Simon's lead vocal, their harmonies, and the backing vocals. Simon later said, quote, "I quite like the R's, the voices singing R. That was the best that we ever did. It was quite a lot of voices we put on, maybe 12 or 15. We sang it in the echo chamber." End quote. Here's The Only Living Boy in New York.
Your plane right on time. I know your partner will find. Fly down to Mexico.
Garfunkel was right to look for another job, because not long after Bridge Over Troubled Water came out, the pair broke up, never to record again. Actually, that's not true. In 1975, they reunited and recorded the song My Little Town, which Simon included on his album Still Crazy After All These Years. But we'll get to that album in a minute. When the pair broke up, there was only one thing Simon was going to do next, and that was forge ahead with a solo career. Garfunkel tried to have one too, but without Simon's songs to sing, his never really took off. Simon's did though, and his solo work compares well with what he recorded with Garfunkel. In January 1971, 12 months after Bridge Over Troubled Water came out, Simon was back in the studio recording his second album, which would be called Paul Simon. Remember, he released the Paul Simon Songbook way back in 1965. This album was much better than his first, which was to be expected because the first one was very timid. Simon was now one of the biggest artists on the planet, so there was no shortage of confidence in him and by him. Simon's personal life wasn't on solid footing though. His marriage to Peggy Harper was on shaky ground, and he references this in two songs, Run That Body Down and Congratulations. Other themes included adolescence and drug use. Reviews were good, very good. Writing in the Village Voice, Robert Christgau said, quote, "This is the only thing in the universe to make me positively happy in the first 2 weeks of February 1972, end quote. And I'm sure that made Simon positively happy too. Rolling Stone later said it was among the best 300 albums ever made. The song I want to play is track 2, Duncan. I just love the opening line.
Couple in the next room, bound to win a prize. They've been going at it all night long. Well, I'm trying to get some sleep, but these motel walls are cheap. Lincoln Duncan is my name, and here's my song. Here's my song. My father was a fisherman, my mama was a fisherman's friend, and I was born in the boredom and the chowder. So when I reached my prime, I left my home in the Maritimes, headed down the turnpike for New England, sweet New England. In the knees of my jeans, I was left without a penny in my pocket. Ooh-wee, I was about destitute as a kid could be, and I wished I wore a ring so I could hawk it. I'd like to hawk it. A young girl in a parking lot was preaching to a crowd, singing sacred songs and reading from the Bible. Well, I told her I was lost, and she told me all about the Pentecost, and I seen that girl as the road to my survival.
The reception this album received, Simon was soon back in the studio recording the follow-up, 1973's There Goes Rhymin' Simon. Album 3 sold even better than Album 2, going as high as 2 on the US chart, propelled by the single Kodachrome. Now Kodachrome, for anyone too young to know, was the name of some photographic film made by Kodak, and because it was trademarked, the BBC in the UK wasn't allowed to play the song. Fun fact, although maybe not so fun for Simon. One thing Simon should be congratulated for is the fact that he didn't fall back on the style he and Garfunkel had forged. Simon was soaking up musical influences everywhere, and this was most apparent on this album. Kodachrome had elements of salsa, and elsewhere there was Dixieland, Jamaican rhythms, and even gospel. And then there was the last track on side one, One Man's Ceiling is Another Man's Floor. It's not the best song on the album, but given it features some piano, something very un-Simon & Garfunkel, it's evidence of Simon taking himself out of his comfort zone and spreading his wings. So let's hear it.
There's been some hard feelings here about some words that was said. Been some hard feelings here, and what is more, there's been a bloody purple nose and some bloody purple clothes that were messing up the lobby floor. It's just a apartment house fool, so all you apartment house fools, remember one man
man's ceiling is another man's floor. One man's ceiling is another man's floor. There were some strange goings on, but some folks have come and gone. Like the elevator man don't wake no more. I heard a racket in the hall, and I thought I heard a call, but I never opened up my door. It's just apartment house sense, it's like apartment house rents. Remember, one man's ceiling is another man's floor. I tell you, one man.
There goes Ryman Simon did nothing to disappoint the critics. The LA Times, for example, said, quote, "Combining a variety of musical textures, Simon's new album firmly establishes him as one of our most valuable and accessible artists," end quote. Elsewhere, Uncut gave it 5 stars, as did The Guardian and Record Collector. And in 2003, Rolling Stone ranked it as high as 267 on its list of the greatest albums ever made. Simon took 1974 off to get divorced, as you do, but CBS didn't seem to mind. They just issued a live album they'd recorded the year before to keep things ticking along. But unlike some live albums, this one didn't sound like it was recorded to feed the chooks. Live Ryman, as it was called, had merit. Recorded with the Jesse Dixon Singers and Urubamba, a Peruvian ensemble, it's worth Spotifying if you like Simon's music. But we need to press on with his studio records, because there's still a few to get through. Simon resurfaced in 1975 with Still Crazy After All These Years, a record that was much darker than anything he had recorded up to this point. Not that it mattered though, because it went to number one in his homeland, his first solo album to do so, and it won Grammy for Album of the Year. Outside of the title track, the other song of note was 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, which was clearly in reference to the end of his marriage.
Cruel, there must be 50 ways to leave your lover. 50 ways to leave your lover.
Truth be told, though, it's not one of Simon's strongest albums, and it suffers a little from its 1975 LA production. In fact, I'd say it's one of my least favourite Simon albums. See what you think. This is the track I mentioned earlier that he recorded with Garfunkel. This is My Little Town. After Still Crazy, Simon stopped writing songs and concentrated instead on writing a screenplay for a movie called One Trick Pony, which not only got made, but Simon starred in and supplied the soundtrack. Now, if you haven't heard of the movie, don't worry, you are not the only one. It would struggle to see the light of day even on television now if it came out. The reason I mention it, though, is A, to explain the 5-year break between albums, and B, the record Simon would resurface with, and that was also called One Trick Pony. But the songs on the album are different to the songs in the movie. Same songs, but different arrangements. The most well-known song off that record is Late in the Evening, but that's pretty much it by the way of songs worth talking about, according to me. I say that because O'Marion, the last song on side one, was described by Record Collector, which at the time was a reputable music trade publication. They called it a masterpiece. A masterpiece? Jesus. See what you think. This is O'Marion.
The boy's got brains, he just don't use them, that's all. Boy's got brains, just refuse to use him, and that's all. He says the more I get to thinking, the less I tend to laugh. The boy's got brains, he just abstains. He's got a heart, but it beats on his opposite side. It's a strange phenomenon the laws of nature define. He said it's a chance I had to take, so I shifted my heart for its safety's sake. He's got a heart, but it beats on his opposite. Oh, Marion, I think I'm in trouble here. I should have believed you when I heard you sing it. The only time that love is an easy game is when two other people.
Record Collector went out of business. Following the movie and album, something unexpected happened. Simon reunited with Garfunkel for a free one-off concert in New York Central Park. Staged on September 19, 1981, it drew 500,000 people, which at the time was the largest attendance for a concert ever. Imagine being in the back row. A double album came out, as did a DVD. Simon and Garfunkel were back in the news. After the show, the pair of them sat down, broke bread, and went on a world tour the following year. But peace was only short-lived. By the end of the tour, the pair of them were again not speaking to one another. Notwithstanding any of that, they knew a good thing when they saw it, and plans were made for a new Simon and Garfunkel studio album. Simon had already written the songs. Now, the story goes that everything was going well until they came to a song called Hearts and Bones, which Simon had written about his relationship with Carrie Fisher. Apparently, Simon thought the song was too personal to be a Simon and Garfunkel song, so he refused to have it considered for the record. Garfunkel, though, knew it was a good song, and he lost it when Simon told him he couldn't have it. And I must say, I could see his point. Simon wrote a lot of very personal songs back in his Simon and Garfunkel days, and this was no deeper than any of those. Think Bridge Over Troubled Water, for example, or even Kathy's song. Anyway, apparently that was the end of the album, so Simon pressed on, removed all of Garfunkel's parts, and made a solo album, which would be called Hearts and Bones. Hearts and Bones is arguably Simon's most underrated album, and it was certainly a major improvement on One Trick Pony. It would have been interesting to see how it would have sounded if it did come out as a Simon and Garfunkel album, but we'll never know. Anyway, here's the title track, Hearts and Bones.
One and one half wandering Jew. Free to wander wherever they choose, are traveling together in the sangre de Cristo, in the blood of Christ mountains of New Mexico. On the last leg of a journey they started a long time ago, the arc of a love affair, rainbows in the high desert air. Mountain passes slipping into stones, hearts and bones, hearts.
hearts and bones. Hearts and bones. Thinking back to the season before, looking back through the cracks in the door. Two people were married, the act was outrageous, the bride was contagious, she burned like a bride. These events may have had some effect on the man with the girl by his side. The arc of a love affair, his hands rolling down her hair. Love like lightning shaking till it moans. Hearts and bones. Hearts and bones. Hearts and bones. Hearts and bones.
Hearts and Bones received mostly positive reviews, and almost everyone thought it was a vast improvement on One Trick Pony. So it wasn't just me. 5 stars in Uncut, 4 in Rolling Stone, and a B+ in The Village Voice. If Simon thought his relationship with Garfunkel was bad, things were no better at home. His marriage to Fisher had collapsed, and coupled with the poor sales of Hearts and Bones, Simon slipped into a period of depression. But then, sometime in 1984, someone sent him a tape of some South African street musicians, and Simon was transfixed. So transfixed that he and producer Roy Haley travelled to Johannesburg and spent 2 weeks recording local musicians. Inspired, he returned home and wrote what would become the Graceland album, which featured South African music and musicians. Now, I mention this because it was very controversial at the time. There was a cultural boycott in place on South Africa in protest against its apartheid policy. But Simon reasoned he was supporting black South African musicians, so he pressed ahead. Now, I don't need to sell Graceland to you, so I'm not going to try. By now you would have heard a few of its tracks, You Can Call Me Al, The Boy in the Bubble, and of course the title track. And you may have heard of this one too, but I'm going to play it because I think it best encapsulates what Simon was trying to achieve. This is Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes, which features Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Awa, 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 try a leg in the ganja.
Awa, awa,
God is in so wind is an amchan.
Awa, awa,
Sibona, Gwenze, Gaganja.
Awa, awa,
Amandumbazane.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 She's crazy, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of your shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, "You've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds. And I could say, ooh, ooh, as if everybody knows what I'm talking about. As if everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Thank you. makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and he puts on aftershave to compensate for his ordinary shoes. And she said, honey, take me dancing, but they ended up by sleeping in a doorway by the bodegas and the lights on over Broadway, wearing diamonds on the soles of their shoes. And I could say, ooh. And everybody here would know what I was talking about. I mean, everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about
Graceland was, of course, a smash hit, a cross-cultural phenomenon, and Simon felt vindicated in not bowing to peer and public pressure. It would be interesting, though, if given the same circumstances, Graceland would have been well-received today. I suspect not, but the truth is I can see both sides. But that's just me. Anyway, Graceland restored Simon to someone of significance on the world music stage. It won Album of the Year at the Grammys and topped most music publications' year-end album lists. He wasn't to know it at the time, but this would be the last time that Simon would have such a profile. Part of the reason for that may have been the four-year gap between Graceland and its follow-up, The Rhythm of the Saints, but part of it also might be because of the songs. They just weren't as consistently good post-Graceland. The Rhythm of the Saints is a curious album. Where Graceland championed black South African music, The Rhythm of the Saints championed Brazilian music. But the Western world wasn't really ready for a Brazilian album, and even though it did okay in the US, it didn't really cash in on Graceland. And if you thought The Rhythm of the Saints sounded a bit Graceland-light, that is, had Simon become a one-trick pony, he also went to his Simon & Garfunkel playbook and staged a free concert, but this one in Madison Square Garden, and he featured some of the Brazilian musicians who had contributed to the album. The event was also recorded and put out as a live album. But back to the studio album. The Obvious Child was the obvious single, but I'm going to play track two, Can't Run But, which is a song he would later re-record for his last album, which we'll get to in a minute. Here's Can't Run But. Saints received positive reviews and went to number one in the UK and Canada, and number four in the States, so no one was calling it a failure. They were saving that for his next one, but they would have to wait 7 years to do so. Now, I'm not saying Songs from the Cape Man is a bad album. I'm just saying by 1997, Paul Simon was off everybody's radar, and the album didn't do anywhere near as well as The Rhythm of the Saints. Simon spent some of those 7 years writing a Broadway musical called The Cape Man, a production that was a critical and commercial disappointment, losing $11 million. Simon struggled to conform to the way Broadway musicals are produced, something he later reflected on, saying, quote, "It's not that easy to write for the theatre for the first time. You really need a guide. For people coming out of popular music, writing songs that further the plot is different from writing whatever is on your mind. It's a different discipline," end quote. The album was a flop too, going only as high as 42 on the American chart, a new low for Simon. The song I'm going to play is a bit of doo-wop, and it's called Adios, Hermanos.
It was the morning of October 6, 1960. I was wearing my brown suit, preparing to leave the house of dear. Shook some hands, then adios, Brooklyn amigos. Maybe some of the mad hopes have seen me again. Some even said that my Judge Darryl Culkin, wouldn't play it by the book, maybe let us off the hook. But whoa, afraid to leave the project, to cross into another neighborhood. The Blancos and the nigger gangs, well, they'd kill you if they could.
Angel of mercy, people are suffering all over the world. Spanish children are taught on their knees to believe. Angel of mercy, people are suffering all over the island tonight. Mothers weep, sisters grieve.
Well, I entered the courtroom, state of New York, county of New York. Just some spick they scrubbed off the sidewalk. Guilty by my dress, guilty in the press. Let the Cape Man burn for the murders. Well, the Spanish boys had their day in court, and now it was time for some fucking law and order. The electric chair for the greasy pair, said the judge to the court reporter. Afraid to leave the projects, to cross into another neighborhood. The newspapers and the TV crews, well, they'd kill you if they could.
Angel of mercy, people are suffering all over the world.
With his Broadway dreams in tatters, Simon headed out on the road with Bob Dylan, and the pair of them alternated as the headline act. The tour, though, seemed to spark Simon's creative juices, and before long he had enough material for a new album, which he started recording in earnest in 2000. The album he made, You're the One, is what some people call a sleeper. It took a while to catch on. Released a little fanfare, critics seemed to like it though, and it sold enough to reach 19 on the US chart and 20 in the UK. Canada and Japan liked it even more, where it went 8 and 9 respectively. The Grammys also liked it, nominating it for Album of the Year, which meant Simon became the first artist to be nominated in that category for 5 consecutive decades, a feat Paul McCartney later replicated. Rolling Stone, which gave it 4 stars, said, quote, "The melodies are lucid, simple in the best sense of the term. The album's overall impression is of quietness and introspection," end quote. In other words, it was a bit like Hearts and Bones. He hadn't travelled somewhere and come back with another country's music ringing in his ear and decided to make an album dedicated to it. That's not to say it doesn't have outside influences in there. We'd come to know it wouldn't be a Paul Simon album otherwise. The album didn't have a hit single to help sell it though, but in some ways that helped the album's cohesiveness. This was an album with a capital A, something to be played from start to finish in its entirety. none really jumped out at you and screamed to be singled out. Pardon the pun. The song I'm going to play is Old, which is Simon doing his best Buddy Holly.
The first time I heard Peggy Sue, I was 12 years old. Russians up in rocket ships and the war was cold. Now many wars have come and gone, genocide still goes on, Buddy Holly still goes on, but his catalog was sold. First time I smoked, guess what? Paranoid. First time I heard Satisfaction, I was young and unemployed. Down the decades every year, summer leaves and my birthday's here, and all my friends stand up and cheer and say, man, you're old, getting old. Celebrate the birth of Jesus on Christmas Day, and Buddha found Nirvana along the Lotus Way. About 1500 years ago, messenger Muhammad spoke, and his wisdom like a river flowed through hills of gold. Wisdom is old, the Koran is old, the Bible is old, the greatest story ever told.
And he hooked up again with Garfunkel and toured Europe and the States. Nothing material came of the union though, and this would be the last time that we would hear from them or see them together again. Then by chance Simon hooked up with Brian Eno, and the pair of them worked off and on some new songs Simon had written. Simon liked Eno's electronic bent and thought it brought something new to his largely guitar-based way of writing. All up, three of their collaborations made it onto Simon's next album, 2006's Surprise. One of the first songs written for the album was a track called Wartime Prayers, which was actually written before the Iraq War, but given it came out after the invasion, it took on extra significance. But I want to play you one of his Eno collaborations, because for mine, these were the album's most interesting tracks, and you can hear Eno's influence. This is Another Galaxy, which also sounds a little Peter Gabriel in parts. See what you think. On for a bit before Simon eventually starts to sing.
On the morning of her wedding day, when no one was awake, she drove across the border, leaving all the yellow roses on her wedding cake, her mother's tears, breakfast order. She's gone, gone, gone. There is a moment, a chip in time, lesser crime. When your eyes are blind with tears, but your heart can see another life, another God.
surprise wasn't really a surprise, though. Yes, Eno had added a texture here and there, but overall it sounded like a sequel to You're the One. And maybe that was deliberate. I don't know. That said, it sold relatively well, debuting at 4 in the UK and 14 in the US. Q gave it 4 stars, as did Uncut, whereas Rolling Stone just gave it 3.5. Pitchfork gave it even less, 5 out of 10, and I'm kind of with them. I think it's a so-so record, neither here nor there. Anyway, we'd have to wait 5 years for his next album, which was titled So Beautiful or So What? In that time, his 30-year association with Warner Brothers ended, so he wound up financing So Beautiful himself, and that would probably explain why he recorded it in his home studio. Co-produced with Phil Ramone, the album's themes largely centre on spirituality and mortality. But when this was put to Simon, he did agree, but he said it wasn't intentional. The record, which was eventually released by Hear Music, a label co-owned by Starbucks, was widely regarded to be Simon's best in decades. And I would agree with that. It was certainly better than his past couple of albums. There was more depth and texture to these songs. They all just didn't blend into one another. And Simon later agreed, saying it was his best album in 20 years. The song I'm going to play is The Afterlife.
After I died and the makeup had dried, I went back to my place. No moon that night, but a heavenly light shone on my face. Still I thought it was odd, there was no sign of God just to usher me in. Then a voice from above, sugar-coated with love, said, let us begin. You got to fill out a form first, and then you wait in the line. You got to fill out a form first, and then you wait in the line. Okay, a new kid in school, got to follow the rule, you got to learn the routine. Whoa, there's a girl over there with the sunshiny hair, like a homecoming queen. I said, hey, what you say, it's a glorious day. By the way, how long you been dead? Maybe you, maybe me, maybe baby makes 3, but she just shook her head. You got to fill out a form first, and then you wait in the line. You got to fill out a form first, and then you wait in the line. And all the noses from narrow to flat. Had to stand in the line just to glimpse the divine. What you think about that? Well, it seems like our fate to suffer and wait for the knowledge we seek. It's all his design, no one cuts in the line, no one here likes a sneak. You got to fill out a form first, and then you wait in the line. You got to fill out a form first, and then you wait in the line.
So Beautiful or So What got 4 stars in Rolling Stone, and when it came to ranking the best albums of 2011, it said it came in 3rd, which was quite the accolade. Positive reviews didn't translate into sales though. The record wasn't a flop, but Simon's star had clearly waned. But given he had put out just 2 albums in 11 years, that was to be expected. And we'd have to wait another 5 years for his next album, which would be his last of new material. Called Stranger to Stranger, this was another strong album, and unlike So Beautiful or So What, its positive reviews were reflected on the charts. It debuted at number 3 in the US and eventually topped the British charts. Stranger to Stranger was further proof that Simon was willing to experiment when inspiration struck. At his son's suggestion, he collaborated with an Italian DJ called Clap Clap on 3 tracks, and elsewhere, no 2 songs were the same. We didn't know this would be Simon's last album of new material at the time, and there was nothing on Stranger to Stranger to suggest that it should be. The Boston Globe said Stranger to Stranger was Simon's, quote, richest and most instantly appealing collection since Graceland, end quote. And the LA Times was even more effusive, saying the record was, quote, pop music at its most artful and relevant, a sentiment from a septuagenarian representative of rock's old guard that's arguably as potent as anything from seemingly more streetwise artists 1/3 of his age, end quote. The album debuted at number one in the UK, and at 74, Simon became the oldest male solo artist to do that. In the US, the album debuted at number three. The song I'm going to play is one that sounds like an outtake from Graceland, and I don't say that as a criticism. It was kind of nice to hear echoes of that album. The song is called Cool Papa Bell.
It turns out to be a great thing for me. I don't worry, I don't think, because it's not my job to worry or to think. Not me. I'm more like every day I'm here, I'm grateful, and that's the gist of it. Now you may call that a bogus bullshit new age point of view, but check out my tattoo. Says wall to wall fun. Does everyone know everyone? Wall to wall fun. Meet Dr. Well. At Cool Papa Bell, the fastest man on earth did dwell as Cool Papa Bell.
Simon's final album, In the Blue Light, came out 2 years later. And this is the one where he re-records a bunch of songs that appeared on previous albums, songs that he thought got overlooked a little. Only Simon's Rusted-On fans would have been familiar with the originals. Now, given you're most likely unfamiliar with the originals, I'm going to play a reworking of Can't Run But and see if you think it's better than the version you heard earlier. Here's Can't Run But, take two.
Can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but a cooling system burns out in the Ukraine. Trees and umbrellas protect us from the new rain. Armies of engineers to analyze the soil. The food we contemplate, the water that we boil. I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but to dream about us after that long good night. I felt a pain in my shoulder blade, was like a pencil point, a love bite. A couple was rubbing against us, rubbing and doing that new dance. The man was wearing a jacket and jeans, the woman was laughing in advance. I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Cannot run, but
In the Blue Light was going to be a nice note to end on. It was a bookend, you could say. It was like Simon now had everything in place and could go slip-sliding away into retirement and reflect on his career. Problem was, he's since come out of retirement and released the 33-minute suite Seven Psalms, which, if you're a Paul Simon fan, you are going to enjoy. But with that out of his system, I'm going to assume he has now retired again. And as he sits back in retirement, does he remember the time that he felt like he was the only living boy in New York, playing that American tune? Does he think of the boxer who realizes a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest? Does he think of the boy in the bubble, or playing with Julio down by the schoolyard? Or Mrs. Robinson, what's she up to? or Marion, or Lincoln Duncan? Cecilia. Does he still hear the sound of silence as he crosses that bridge over troubled water late in the evening? Is he homeward bound? And is he, at 81, still crazy after all these years? Who knows? But that's a hell of a life. A hell of a career. One thing we can be sure of, though, is this. The Mississippi Delta will still be shining like a national guitar as he follows the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. And where's he headed to? Well, he's headed to where all musicians go to pay their respects. Graceland. Spotify page and you'll find one that I've curated for you. And while you're waiting for next week's episode, you might like to check out some of my other podcasts. There's Song Sung New, which looks at covers of famous artists and songs, and there's also In My Life, which is a collection of interviews that allows each artist to tell their own story. Song Sung New and In My Life. It's music for those who want to know more.
There is a girl in New York City who calls herself the human trampoline. Sometimes when I'm falling, flying, tumbling in turmoil, I say, whoa, so this is what she means. She means we're bouncing into Graceland. And I see losing love is like a window in your heart. Well, everybody sees you're blown apart. Everybody feels the wind blow.
When they begin, the beginning.